Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan, and today we are promoting neurodiversity. Maybe it's the first time you are hearing about neurodiversity. It is the concept that there is no one right way of thinking, learning, and behaving, and neurological differences in people, such as autism, ADHD, dyslexia, OCD, and more, should not be automatically classified as inherent flaws. To discuss this topic, I have with me Sabina Bravo, the founder of Animal Law Focus, a nonprofit dedicated to advancing legal protections for farm animals, especially in the Global South. We talked about the link between neurodivergence and veganism, Elon Musk and entrepreneurship, the obstacles neurodivergent people face at work, working from home, and much more. Visit the episode's notes to connect with Sabina and learn more about the Animal Law Focus. Also, for more episodes shedding light on the incredible diversity of people in this movement, including the diversity of brains, follow or subscribe to the show, share the podcast with your friends. Let's celebrate every Tuesday how compassion for animals unites people from all walks of life. Thank you. So we met in person a few months ago, and you were leading a meetup about neurodiversity, and it was such a lovely conversation. We were all animal advocates who consider ourselves neurodiverse, and we were talking about our experience of being neurodiverse in this movement. And in that conversation, you said something in the line of, I think the majority of people in the vegan movement, animal movement, are somewhat in the neurodiverse spectrum. And I thought it was such an intriguing statement to make. And it comes with a stark contrast with the fact that we have no discussion whatsoever on neurodiversity in this movement. I think you were the first one I met to raise this point. And so let's start with that. What is your observation of the state of neurodiversity in the vegan movement?
Well, first of all, like a very quick clarification that my English is my second language, so please bear with me. Well, I'm not an expert in this field of neurodiversity. I didn't study like psychology or anything related. But I have become very involved because I'm very interested in creating more inclusive spaces. And I will say, like, from my personal experience, before I founded my organization, I work in other environments where I constantly felt like misunderstood, unseen, not valued, maybe. And it affect me really, really like hard. It consumed my like all my emotional stability at the time, and long after that. And I think I started to question me like what was happening with me, because my diagnosis of neurodiversity didn't came like it was with me from the start when I was very little, but nobody told me that that was a neurodiversity. So nobody teach me about this. Like all they say that it was ADHD, but we didn't talk about it in my family or with therapists, because it was the, I don't know, early 2000s. So the knowledge that we had at that moment was very little on how to manage and how to build like strong person individuals, specifically women and girls and women with neurodiversity. So yeah, as I am highly functional, we didn't talk about that anymore. So, but when being an adult, and specifically in those environments when you're forced to see like a lot of things very like with a strong emotional content, with animals, you start like feeling like I started like feeling like rediscovering this neurodiversity, this diagnosis. And I found these things that really were BS for me. Like, and I kept asking me, like, how a movement that is so empathetic, how a movement that is so sensitive, can be so, I don't know, judgmental and strict with persons. Like, and when I said the majority of people in the animal advocacy movement are somewhat in a neurodiversity spectrum, because we are people that is highly empathetic and highly sensitive, and we have this connection to those kind of activisms or actions in our society that require like a push of justice. And the people, neurodivergent people, I like the special people that are very willing to pursue that look like the seek of justice. And I've been talking to a lot of people in the movement, and they maybe they don't have, not all of them have diagnosis, but you can see that as they have told me like their struggles, like their experiences, you can see that there is like a potential diagnosis of neurodivergence in, behind. And I think we're losing a lot of talents, because the movement right now, as it is right now, this moment, is not prepared to embrace the neurodivergence.
What do you say to someone who is prejudiced against neurodiverse people who think if I hire someone who's neurodiverse in my team, I'll have, I'll be less productive with my organization or with my campaign or whatever, and so I'll avoid that profile. What do you say to that person?
Like to the person that has to hire.
Yes.
Well, first of all, well, it's easy for me because as a neurodivergent person, I don't have that prejudice, but I can try to put in that position. And I think we all know like what are the biggest struggles in neurodivergent people, like ADHD, one of the biggest problems. Like the sensory sensitivity, executive dysfunction, and well, the autism has a lot of other struggles as well, like communication primarily. But we don't talk about the gains. We don't talk about like the good things that neurodivergent people bring with them to the team. We only focus the speech online on the disadvantages, not on the advantages. So I will say people neurodivergent, and I'm not talking like of myself, I'm talking a lot of other people that I met, are highly committed with the job because they feel it like in their bones. If they want to volunteer or if they want to work in this, like nobody's forcing them, nobody. So you can trust that there will be like very good workers or additions for your team. Also, they bring with them a lot of out of the box thinking, and that's one thing that I really love. Like when you're trapped, like neurotypical minds usually get trapped in the common problems of society. But if you put like an addition of a neurodivergent mind to solve the problem, you would probably find it like in different solution that you never think of. And that would be like your biggest gain, to have that person in your team to untrap the problem that you've been caught up with a in I don't know, like innovative solution. But they are also, I know very neurodivergent people that are very highly organized. They have hyperfocus that is really, really good. So probably you will have like persons working like in that task, like focusing in a task like for hours, no interruptions, no matter what is happening outside, like the world could be falling apart, and the neurodivergent people will still be focusing on the task. And that is really amazing to have like that like it's not that easy to take you away from that state, and you can trust that person will fulfill the task very well.
Okay, so your diagnosis of the problem, echoed with the people who were present in that meetup I referenced earlier, of neurodiverse people from everywhere in the movement. And actually, I should describe, how you organized this meeting, or should I say where. You created that meeting in a spare room of a convention center. And there were, dim lights in a corridor where there wasn't a lot of noise. And you invited people to sit on the floor in a circle or in a chair, at their convenience. You took really, measures that promoted inclusivity for neurodiverse people, but that looks from, an outsider perspective, that looks really out there. It's not your conventional office looking, corporate looking scene. And so I guess two questions in there. First of all, how do we create inclusive spaces for neurodiverse people? And what do you make of the fear of going too far from conventions and, the normal way of doing things?
Well, I will start with the first question. And probably you will have to repeat the other one because hello, ACHC. but yeah, how do we create spaces more inclusive? Yeah, I remember what that meetup specifically in Ava. And I remember that I asked specifically for a room that was very quiet, like isolated from all the noise, because I know that conference, like for myself, but for other people as well, can be very, very, I don't know how can I say this word in English actually, but you can feel easily drained after that, or during the conference. So I wanted to create like a space for people to feel like free, like to behave as they want, within, of course, the bounds of common respect between us. That's why I never push anyone to like talk about their diagnosis only if they wanted to, because actually that is one of the measures I will take in my workplace, that I will never ask for the people to specify like the diagnosis behind the neurodivergent. Like there's like eight conditions in the neurodivergent spectrum. I don't need to know what is yours. I just need to know what are your specific needs, so I can cover those needs, make all the accommodations for you to feel like comfortable, to feel safe, to feel like valued, to feel seen, respected, and specifically, like more important for me, for the people to really feel like connected to the team, like, oh my gosh, this team really is something else. Like, they really value me, they really see me. And there you will find like the whole connection of the person with the mission. And it's something that we really should look for in the movement. So That's like what I try to apply in my daily life, like running an organization, leading an organization myself. I have never asked for a diagnosis. And I start like all this work environment with telling them, like in the first interview, like we are inclusive space for all diversity, including neurodiversity. So if you need like certain accommodation.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.
Please tell me that there's no need to share with all of the team, but you can tell me and I will make sure that you can feel comfortable in this. Like very specific, I don't know, I will mention an example, very, very specific. We had to, me and another person of the team, we had to share room for EAG London in June. And I made very, I don't know, normal average document of like agreement between the two of us of sharing the room, but I added like a space where me or her can add like their specific needs for those nights that we're gonna share a room. Like for example, she was very like sensitive to some noises after like during the night. So I put all my effort to avoid like my night because I'm a person of I'm an out night owl, so I put all my efforts to avoid to disrupt that, to not make her feel like uncomfortable. So I took my MacBook and I went downstairs to work for like my night shift. So I think those kind of accommodations could be really, and she was very grateful about that. And of course, I will expect for her to do the same if I told her like, you know, I had this specific need. So yeah, I think those very little steps that we can take can make a whole difference in our work environments. Yeah.
What do you make of the people who will hear that and say, listen, it's not my responsibility to do everything I can to, you know, make your space of work comfortable for you? Like, you need to give a little and, you know, just adapt to the way we do things here.
Yeah, the typical speech, and it's not only on the animal movement, animal advocacy movement. I have experienced that speech in my professional life before the animal movement, when I was working as in buffets of lawyers, and it happens a lot. First of all, you cannot be a neurodivergent person and still have traits of a neurodivergent condition. Not the full diagnosis, but still have traits like sensitivity, hypersensitivity, or specifically to I don't know, noises or textures or smells or other kind of sensitivity. And that doesn't mean that you have the whole like the whole list of traits to be like a neurodivergent people person. So first of all, I will start telling them that it's not just the neurodiversity, it's how complex is people. Actually, there's a new term that is very it's being discussed currently, that is not neurodiversity, it's neurocomplexity. So we are all of us are very complex human beings. Like hu the human being is a very complex kind of animal, if you think about it. And it could be very complicated to adjust for everyone. So just I will say that we don't have to adjust. We don't have to create like a neutral space, like from starting with the perspective that none of us, like neurodivergent or not, should be exposed to these kind of situations. I think we have been exposed to different situations that we over the years, and I think we started like to normalize them. Not everyone is an early bird. Not everyone can, I don't know, wake up like at 5 a.m. and start they like do it like going to the gym or doing yoga. I mean, I love that people. I wish I was one of them, but I'm not. So I think the pandemic actually show like a very good opportunity for these improvements, like to start working remotely and therefore to have less supervision on how you distribute your own schedules, your own hours. And I think and actually it took a lot of pressure away from people like I don't know, they don't want to dress like formally every day. They don't want to leave. I don't know. They have a specific anxiety of leaving their homes. And usually, bosses or leader, well, I will use the word bosses, are not very involved in what is happening with their work employees. So, probably, like, I will say, like, more than the half of them are struggling in silence. But you are not creating the spaces for them to tell you. So that's why you see, like, you can see that everyone is doing fine. And when someone says something, because I don't know, they just can't cope anymore, they tell them, you can go somewhere else. I mean, look at this. We have 20 people and all of them is working well. They haven't told me like anything, and you're the only one with this problem. So obviously you have to go. But have you really created the spaces for all the other 20 people to tell you what is happening in their lives? Like maybe they're really struggling to take the public transportation every day to go to work, and they start their day in the office, go into the bathroom and cry. I've seen that. I lived through that. So I will say that's like the normalization behind. I will start like if I'm not a neurodivergent boss, I will start like questioning myself, like, have I made like enough feedback surveys, or have I created this space? Maybe Friday t afternoon, all the team like share like an informal retreat. I don't know, to share experiences. They don't have to tell me their problems, but somehow, within the conversation, you will notice that not everyone else is doing like 100% good. I think that will be like my advice.
A weird follow-up question. Do you think the problem starts not at the workplace, but in the schools? Because, I was a VP of a nonprofit that was taking care of educating teachers, social workers, physicians about giftedness, which is in the spectrum of neurodiversity. And the biggest issue that neurodiverse people were meeting in their life, and they were always going back to that was school. School was a traumatizing experience because of the degree of conformity, because there was no space for, you know, weirdness, or you would get bullied, you know, mercilessly. So it comes from the teachers. It comes also from your fellow students. And you are also in this infant part of your life where, you know, you're discovering yourself and you don't know much about what's happening and why you're different from others. So it's a very difficult period. And I feel like schools are not making enough efforts to help neurodiverse people.
Actually, I have a very good example, like, of myself. Very interesting story to answer this question. And I always try to tell this story because it changed everything for me. I was 7 years old, I think. I had a friend in second grade. We wore uniforms. We usually wear uniforms here in Chile. And the thing is, she told me that her stockings, like the socks, were too tight around her calves. So I helped her by grabbing a scissor and cutting the elastic with scissors because the elastic was too tight. That was a problem. So my 7-year-old found a solution very quickly. The teacher saw this and called my parents and told them, like, she told them that this is not normal. Like, nobody else behaves like this. That was like out of the box thinking, actually. So, but they weren't ready to see that. They're not informed about this. And they sent me to all kind of therapists, like psychologists, neurologists, educational psychologists, all of them. And I remember kind of traumatizing, but it wasn't too tiny because of all the games that they made you do. But I remember going to a lot of therapies. And they made like a lot of tests. And that's when my parents like received the formal like diagnosis, like she has hyperactivity. And probably she has ADHD, but the thing is she has so high grades. At that time, the high grades were like excluding, like if you had high grades, there was no way to have like the whole ADHD diagnosis. Now we know that especially for girls and women, we can be very functional and have high grades and still be ADHD. And my father always told this story, very proud, of course, that the neurologist stood up and shook his hand and told him, you have a very normal like girl. She's just different in her intelligence. She's extremely intelligent, like extremely smart. So be proud of it. Do not shame her anyway, like in any way. And that's why they did, like they give me all the support like at home. So yeah, I struggled a lot in school. I kept like, I went to the other school like one more year, and then I changed to other school, and I changed the schools like 8 times because I never felt like completely comfortable in these environments, because they're very, if you go to a school, I don't know how it is in the US or Canada or the, like in the global north, but in the global south, Latin America, if you go to a school, it's very neurotypical. And the schools that are more like inclusive or like neurodivergent inclusive are very, like the costs are too high. They're not affordable for all people. So I think not all people can expect to have like access to that kind of education. So we have to settle ourselves with the common education. And the common education is very structured in a way, like you have to go to school from 8 to 4 p.m. and you have times for the classes, you have things that you've been expected to do in those classes, you have breaks of 15 minutes, you have another break of half an hour when you have to have lunch. And you will find a lot of girls, boys, like children in general, that are struggling with those conventional structures. Myself, when I started going to the high school from 14 to 18 years old here, I always like I started having my first problems with punctuality, because I started going by myself to high school, not by my parents. Didn't carry me anymore. So I started going by myself, and I always ended up going to school 9 a.m. I always excuse myself, like, look, I got up 6 in the morning. I can't do any more than this. I mean, this is my top commitment with this. And actually, they were very in that school where they were very understanding, but that's not the situation for all children, for all teenagers. So I think I don't have the solution for the educational problem, but I 100% agree that it all starts in the educational state.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Age, because we are kind of being modeled to adapt to certain structures, stricter structures, and they don't allow yourself to explore other kind of systems. So I think that's one thing that creates, of course, the inflexibility in the boss in the future, and the struggle, the internal struggles, emotional struggles of the employee in the future. Like, they has to have been masking themselves for 20 years. And you kind of, I don't know if you're familiar with the masking, but if you mask for 20 years or even for a whole weekend, it can really, really throw you on the floor. Like, I've been myself in conference. I found myself in conference crying every single night, because even if I love to talk to people, it feels like a lot of effort. So imagine that during all the school period and then your whole work life, no escape, because nobody told you that you have another option.
Yeah, great point. For those, for listeners who don't know what masking is, it's like it's all of that intellectual energy and emotional energy that you're putting in trying to look normal and look like everyone else and don't deviate from the norm. And when you offer, so basically when you offer, inclusive spaces, you're relieving people from that pressure, from that expectation to mask in, coming for work. Yeah, what do you make of working from home? Because I was listening to a conversation during COVID, a podcast interview with the head and I think founder of WordPress, and it was on the Sam Harris show. podcast, and he said that I think he's neurodiverse. He's ADHD, like most founders and entrepreneurs. He's neurodiverse. I mean, the biggest one that I have in mind is Elon Musk. He's autistic. He was saying, you know, I established working from home long before COVID. For me, this was the most inclusive and best space for my employees. It wasn't only, you know, great for their family life, because, you know, they were always at home, so they could, you know, take the children to school and all of that. But also it was great for who they were. You know, they had control over their space. And he went through a list of, you know, advantages of working from home. And he wished that after COVID, we would progress as a society and give this option forever, you know, to be able to work from home. Now, not all employers have seen the light. After COVID, many of them have obligated their employees to go back to work. So what do you make of that whole debate?
Well, first of all, we have to acknowledge that for some people, still it's not more comfortable to work from home. Even neurodivergent people I talk to, maybe they don't look for the social connection, but working outside gives them more structure, like more routine. And some people in the neurodivergent spectrum is full of surprises. Like you will find yourself like craving routine, but rejection structures that others put on you. But and you need to like, but you're still gonna look for the your own structure, like in your daily life. So for some people, it's very comfortable to work outside. Myself, COVID happened in my final year of law school. It was the only year where I achieved top marks in several subjects. Like, I was a person in a school, high school, with very high grades. That's why I ended up like entering, like going to the best law school in Chile. That was a huge achievement, but you can imagine my frustration when I started law school and my grades weren't high anymore. So this final year when COVID happened and the world was literally falling apart, in Chile we had our own political problems as well. I found myself more comfortable than ever and having top marks in subjects that I never thought of. And that, of course, helped me a lot. But I still have a lot of problems working from home or studying from home. Like, I have two dogs and a cat, and the dogs, well, not the cat, but the dogs are very much like children, and they need attention, like, at all times. So I don't have that disconnection, like, my work separate from home, so I find myself, like, a lot of times during the day, like, struggling to get some work done, and, like, turning between the work and the house task and the attention to my companion animals. So I think it should be an option for, I don't believe in creating like works that are 100% remote. I think we still have to have a space where people can go if they want to get out of the house, because I don't know, they have a lot of problems inside their home with their family, animals, whatever. We all need like that time out. So we need a safe space to go and work comfortable and quietly. But we have to have the option for the people that really, really hates going out and really wants to stay in their houses and in pyjamas, in PJs, or I don't know, and working like at their own rhythm. I think having that flexibility is really, really necessary. And I understand that for founders, executives, and entrepreneurs, it's very easy for them to say like, oh no, yeah, online remote work is 100% better, because they all usually have like a lot of help at home. I mean, they have the means to pay like domestic help, you know, but for the normal employee, we don't have that. We don't have like the extra amount of money to pay for a person that help us and that can attend your children or your animal children in the meantime you work. So I think we still have to be very careful with like these opposite views, like 100% remote and 100% in person. I think those extreme visions are the responsibles of a lot of employees feeling unseen and unvalued and burning out and having depression very hidden in themselves. So I think, yeah, but I can see why Elon Musk and other founders can say that it's very comfortable and easy for them.
Yes, I mean, I'm not a morning person, and working from home has allowed me to, you know, not wake up very early in order to go and take public transit and find myself, you know, surrounded with strangers at impossible hours of the morning. Like, no, thank you.
And also you have to think about like the time you have to like between your home and your work. Depends on the city. But I mean, I've been in Mexico City. I don't know if you have been there, but it's by far one of the city is amazing. And for the listeners that have been there, they will agree with me. But you can be easily 2 hours of public transportation to go like anywhere. And the traffic is horrible. And I come from a capital in my country. I was born and raised in Santiago, but I never experienced that. I mean, the maximum that it took me was like an hour to go from my home to summer school. But yeah, there are other cities. And that also, and I like to use this concept, kills the spirit. Like you would not feel like physical exhausted, but it kills your spirit over time.
I call them urban jangles. You know, I love that term because, you know, it shows it's the law of the, you know, the strongest in the jungle and all of that. It's very ferocious, very, you know, violent in a way. I don't like big cities. For me, a big city is Montreal. And every time I have, you know, people from elsewhere visit Montreal, they tell me, you know, Montreal is not a city. Montreal is like a park. Montreal is lots of trees and very, you know, calm. And in my country, it's a suburb. There's also the fact that I'm Canadian and I'm not used to, you know, the true big cities. Okay. We talked about, you know, founders being often ADHD and all of that. And I feel it ties well with what you were saying about how there are many advantages of hiring neurodiverse people. How do you explain that neurodiverse people are entrepreneurial?
Well, but I don't know if this is the official version, but I think my explanation will be like, for sure, that as we have different ideas. And I can talk from my experience of what came in my mind or what happened in my mind before I decided to found Animal Law Focus. I see the problems from a different perspective. And I love to look for like the root of the problem and to go deeper and deeper and deeper and try to find a solution that can cover all of most of the spaces in the future. Like I don't like to feel like I'm working right now on this, and this will lead to another campaign in 5 years because this was not very well covered in the first one. I don't know if you follow me. Like, I think I try to find, if it's possible, of course. In some cases, there is not possible. I try to find like the ultimate solution for problems. So I go to the root of the problem. The majority of workplaces, like in animal advocacy movement, but in others as well, I'm not very welcome to these other ideas. So I just found myself like, maybe I should try something like by myself. Because it's the only way where I can put to test this theory that I have, this solution that I've been like strategizing in my head for months. And it's not, I will say that it's not like a pursuit of your own like happiness, like oh, like you're like one more to a long list of achievements. It's not like that. It's just like you feel trapped because you're feeling different way. You only see obstacles to develop your thinking, your ideas. So you create it by yourself. You create your own world. You create like your own opportunity. And I can see that I mean, I have very strong opinions on Elon Musk, but I can see why he did what he did. And I can see why all the other funders, big funders, not myself, I'm a tiny funder of a small organization in very south of the world. I'm talking about the big ones. I can see why they push themselves to do that because they came from a list of struggles with other environments. Even Elon Musk, I mean, I don't remember where he spoke about his story. And the thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you know this, but he talked about having.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And struggles in other work environments and problems like feeling like comfortable and all the common things from neurodivergent people that can't be masking anymore. And I think that is a crucial point because when you became so self-conscious and you feel like you cannot handle more masking, like I can't do this anymore. It's been too long. It's making me sick mentally, physically even. I can't do anymore. And that happened to me last year. It was like I can't see myself going back to these environments. And it came with I quit to a job that I had here in Chile, and after that I couldn't see myself like working again in that kind of system. And I started a whole process of recognizing this old diagnosis and recognizing myself as a neurodivergent person. And unmasking. Actually, my mom always told me, I see now things in you that I haven't seen anymore, like before. And it's because I told mom, it's because I'm not masking anymore. And actually has made me happier than ever. So I think that that's could be like the reason behind.
That is so touching. And yes, it's weird. Every time I talk with founders, not every time, but most founders I have spoken to have the same traits and are neurodiverse, and whatever culture you go to, you know, it's always the same personalities that are atypical, that are, you know, unconventional in their thinking and all of that.
Weird, they told us.
Yes, it's something that I find beautiful. You mentioned how in the hiring process, you talk about how your organization is inclusive to all people, all sexual orientation and all of that. I've heard that before from other organizations, but the neurodiverse part is always missing. Everyone is named, everyone except the neurodiverse people. How do you explain that?
Well, it's because I am neurodivergent myself. I mean, I would not tell you that if I was a neurodivergent, I would have the same self-awareness like about this. There's no way I could know that. So I always tell everyone who, and we have a strong team of 12 people now. They're mostly volunteers, but they work very, very hard and they're very committed people. And I think that I always told them that at first that I myself, I'm a neurodivergent person. And I respect my privacy. I respect my rights of not like coming out with all the diagnoses in front, and I would never ask that from other person. But I'm so conscious of what could generate like a bad work environment, like a sick work environment, can unhealthy work environment can generate in a person. I find myself living that, exactly that. The shaming of emotions, the inflexibility, a lot of other things that probably this is not the place to talk about. But yeah, I've lived through that and I know the pain that it can cause. So from that knowledge, I cannot act in any other way like than just be as inclusive as possible, as flexible as possible. I think I took it like a sort of activism. Like as I told you, I didn't study psychology, but a lot of people in my family are psychologists. And I've been like involved in psychology for like most of my life since this event in a school that I told you. So I think, and I read a lot. So I think I took it like a, I don't know how to say, but obligation of mine that I am an neurodivergent. I've lived through the struggles. I've been shamed for being a different person. Even if that other person didn't know about my diagnosis, you don't have to know. It's the same with the sexual orientation. You don't have to know that. You just have to respect. You just have to make everyone feel as comfortable as possible. That is your only job. I don't have any obligation to disclose my personal problems with you. So that's why, well, in our internal policies, of course, you find the typical ones, the gender, no, the gender discrimination, sexual harassment and everything. I included neurodiversity policies to just create like this environment for me to feel comfortable, but of course for other people. As I told you, I think the push for a lot of funders to start their own company or foundation organization is you want to like create another kind of world for you. And you have this magnificent opportunity to craft it like as you want. And I think, yeah, I always use the sentence like, what would I like to, how would I like to be treated? And what would I like to see in another, in this space as a volunteer, as an employee? And from that position, I started like creating these policies, standard policies that are very, very strict in a way of that we have to follow them, like to in order to have a healthy environment.
Yes, beautiful, and I applaud you for those efforts. To finish our conversation, I was wondering about the link between neurodiversity and veganism. And that reminds me of a conversation I had with Whispers Red. Do you know Whispers Red? She's an ASMR artist, and I invited her on the show way back then. I think it's one of the first episodes of the Vegan Report. And we were talking about hypersensitivity and how that hypersensitivity naturally guided Whispers Red, Emma, to becoming vegan because she was receptive to the suffering of animals. And I'm wondering, is there more neurodiverse people in the vegan community because of that, because of the presence of that hypersensitivity? And do you think that we should make more efforts to target vegan advocacy to neurodiverse people?
Again, I don't have the exact numbers of anything, but yeah, from my perspective, it's highly connected. Like the neurodivergence to a lot of kind of activism, veganism specifically, because we see everything and feel everything in a more intense way. So from that, you can expect that we will feel like very exposed to this kind of suffering that a lot of people they are not affected by that. Even if they show, like I've seen neurotypical persons that even if you show them videos and stuff, they will not change their mind because it's not because they don't deny the suffering that they are seeing. It's because simply they cannot engage with that suffering. I'm not saying that we cannot convert that, of course, but I'm trying to explain like what is happening. They don't connect with that suffering in a personal way. And it generates a lot of dissociation, of course. In neurodivergent persons, that doesn't happen. Like in most of the cases that I've seen, that doesn't happen. You have this ability, this extremely high empathy to feel this as if were your own suffering. You feel like compelled to do something. I don't know where that's coming from, honestly. But I felt it, and I've seen it in other colleagues in the animal advocacy movement that you feel compelled to act because of that. Now, I don't know if I can take the space here to talk about the very quickly, not the funny or the good things about the connection of the neurodivergent and veganism, because in my experience, I had this sensitivity, of course, and I had this emotional connection, but I'm still a neurodivergent person. And that means that I have other traits that didn't make easier for me to become vegan. And that also can happen. I wrote an article on LinkedIn about this, and I saw that a lot of people can relate to that. It goes both ways. Maybe if you have a texture sensitivity specifically, or smell or flavor, That generates that causes that you become bigger. In my case, that delayed my conversion to veganism because I had specific obsessions with textures of certain food that came from animals, and that specific like obsession, it wasn't like it was pleasant for me. So it was like a huge internal struggle, fight with myself, because of course my morality and all my feelings and my heart and mind was like vegan, but I couldn't fight like enough with this need of feel this pleasantness like immediately. As an ADHD person, we're always looking for dopamine like as faster as possible. So this was like a very fast way like to consume this specific food because it caused me like a very pleasant experience inside, and it called me like it calmed like my urge, my need for this dopamine instantly. So I had to do a lot of work on changing that habit and to finally become like fully vegan. So I think it could be like the emotional part. Yeah, it's a very strong connection, but we still have another traits that could be more like complicated to relate to veganism. So that's why I think nobody talk about this like enough. We always telling people that veganism is extremely easy, but for some of us, we still have to acknowledge that it's not 100% easy. It's a commitment that you have to make, and that you could face obstacles even in your body to achieve that. But I think what makes us like really, really good vegans is because we are so conscious about this, and we're willing to fight ourselves like this horrible habit that I had in order to erase it. We can change our habits. That's proven. That's been proven. So, to stop eating animals, and I think that's like at the end of the day, that's the commitment that we value as a movement. That you even if it's difficult for you for whatever reason, you're still willing to make that commitment every single day, and you're still willing to change your habits because the emotional connection to all this suffering, weighs a lot more.
I see where you're coming from. And I'm not of the belief that everyone can be vegan. I do believe there are obstacles to being vegan that we can't just, brush off like if it's nothing. Some people have eating disorders. How are you going to address that? Making a big change like becoming vegan is just psychologically unreachable for them. Other people have belong to religious tradition where eating animals is part of their faith. Now, what are you going to tell them? That God is wrong, that they should abandon their faith? I could go on and on. It's more complex than what mainstream vegan activists make it to be. We're very, like we were saying, neurocomplex, neurodiverse, and culturally diverse, and we have to take that into account and not make it, the default thing. Like, I'm all for initiatives that promote becoming vegetarian or reducing your animal consumption intake. I feel like those are more inclusive approaches. I'm also, I also think that, if you want to advocate for veganism, you should, it's all right too. You're going to talk to a lot of people for whom it will resonate, but you should also accept that for many others, this won't resonate, and you need to be flexible with your approach with those people. Like, are you going to just deny having a conversation with them and building a bridge with them, instead of just, you know, being angry at them for not becoming vegan, propose, you know, alternatives. Become a donor for a vegan cause or an animal rights cause. Like I said earlier, become vegetarian or become vegan one day a week, something like that. Build a bridge.
Yeah, of course. And we cannot forget the economic obstacle for a lot of people that happens in the global south. We don't have, not all of us have the access, like economic, financial situation to access the vegan options that could be or not be affordable, depending on where you live, depending on what kind of vegan food that you're consuming. I was born and raised in a capital. That capital is one of the tops, that top 10, or like with a lot of vegan options. But where I live now, honestly, I have 2-3 restaurants, vegan restaurants, as an option. Of course, that would not stop me of being vegan like myself, but I'm talking about in general, how can we expect of all the people becoming vegan so easily as ourselves if they don't have like this access? And usually those restaurants are not very affordable. So they will probably not be in front of a vegan food, like really good vegan food prepared in a vegan restaurant, you know, that kind of experience that could change a lot in a person and open them to, oh, this is actually very good. You know, I mean, I would 100% eat a tofu prepared in a vegan restaurant that I prepare by myself, because I'm a terrible cook. So, and I would probably take my mother to eat like tofu in that vegan restaurant, not made by myself, for her to have the most pleasant experience with the vegan options. But again, not everyone can afford that. And even Chile is one of the most developed countries in Latin America. I would say like the top one. You can go to other places, to other countries, and you will find like even harder than here.
Yeah, even here in North America, there are food deserts, you know, in the middle of wealthy cities where families do not have access to affordable, nutritious, fiber-rich food. This is my first complaint with vegan restaurants. I've said that so many times to friends. I cannot believe how much like a salad can cost in a vegan restaurant. When I look at the list of ingredients and I read carrots and lettuce and tomatoes, like those are cheap ingredients. Why am I paying an arm for this for this salad or this?
It leads you to think that what is happening with the owner behind that restaurant? Is that owner really vegan for animals, or is maybe trying just to offer a new idea of food and make a profit of it? Because I've seen the two sides, and when a restaurant or a small restaurant, not a big one, like lead by a person that is vegan for the animals, and their own concern is to put this food accessible to everyone, is a very different story than when you see like a person behind a restaurant that is just trying to create new recipes that go with the fashion right now. I don't know, and make a profit of it. So yeah,
completely agree. My favorite restaurant is a Buddhist restaurant, and it's an old couple that has this restaurant, and they make the best vegan food out there, and it's so cheap, I can't believe it, you know, every time. So yeah, they do it for the animals, they do it for ethical reasons, they do it because of their religious beliefs, and it's beautiful. Sabina, did you want to add something before we stop the recording?
I don't think so. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I really hope to I think maybe the only thing that I want to add is, of course, if any expert on this listen to this, do not take it like sharing a whole like a full truth with the world, because I'm just sharing my perspective. I'm always learning. I'm always open to keep learning about this. Actually traveling to EAGX São Paulo this weekend, and I will be leading a neurodiversity meetup, probably like a lot as the Ava one. I'm so grateful that you find like a great space to share. That was like the purpose behind. I just hope that if any of what I told in this conversation makes another founder or leader or person involved in the animal advocacy movement to question themselves and to just try to make this exercise to maybe I should listen to my colleagues in a more careful way, in a more open way. I think that would be amazing.
That's beautiful, and I'm really happy about your efforts. And don't worry about, you know, not being an expert. I'm pretty sure, and that's a bit sad, but I'm pretty sure that those issues have not been studied, and we don't really have data.
I don't have any interest in studying a second career. I'm very well covered with one, just one.
Yeah, I completely understand the sentiment. Sabina, thank you so much for having taken the time to discuss this important topic, and for all the great animal rights work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan, for the opportunity and for your work for animals as well.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.